Hello and welcome to another episode of the Albion Raw here on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, and of course, on our podcast. I'm AD Packham, and we're all a little bit frustrated in association with AllFootballShirts.com. Yes, that's right, frustration is the key word for what feels like the millionth time the Albion failed to convert our dominance into points, and for the first time this season, we failed to score against a struggling Burnley side last night. Add to this last Sunday's defeat at the hands of Spurs, where we had the lion's share of the game, but came away with nothing. Joining myself and Alan Wares today, as we scratch our heads and look for answers, is Andy Bass and Marcus Hancock. Good morning, chaps.
Morning. Can I just say that we're actually recording this Saturday morning, so it's a little bit of a mad scramble. And if there's some weary heads, one, happy birthday, AD, for yesterday. You finally turned eight. So, yeah, many happy returns. And, yeah, the whole frustration of the games in question. But, sorry, AD, back to you.
I do look like Adam Elab did that time. I can't take Adam Elab seriously with hair. It just looked weird.
All right, you go up to his face, and when you're at Whitehall, tell him that.
I know, obviously he's looking great. But good morning, chaps. It's
a bright morning.
It is a bright morning, and I do not feel that bright.
Hang on, you managed to get yourself hungover on lockdown?
Yes.
Textbook.
Yeah.
Textbook. And Andy himself, morning, Andy. On 16 morning. Bottles of wine and freebasing CNN for the last 3 days. I guess that probably your week has been a bit weird. Starts off with Spurs, finishes off with the Albion, and in between is just some head scratching, isn't it?
Pretty much. Also, very, very busy week this week. Massive deadline to get out, but no one wants to hear about that.
Okay. Well, obviously we've got a lot to get through, but let's start with last Sunday at Spurs. And the headline news was this was that Neil Morpay was on the naughty step.
Anyone got any insight as to what was said apart from above and beyond what Graham Potter had mentioned, or that Andy Naylor had reported? That basically it seems to be that. He had an altercation or a few words with someone or some people on the training ground. Anyone got any further insight?
Well, no, it's just salacious gossip, I think, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, we can't really comment too much on it because we don't know the answers. But I mean, the rumours are that he was Billy Big Boots in training, and he got ideas above his station or something.
But, wasn't it also the case that I think there was one or two people criticising his finishing? Now, again, I think that we've got to, irrespective of whether that's true or not, I think that, you know, before we start talking about the Spurs game, which obviously he wasn't part of, what do we make of Neil Morpay? Now, he was obviously the leading scorer last season. He's got four so far, a bit two penalties. What do we make of Neil Morpay's contribution to the team, Andy?
I think he makes a good contribution. I think he's getting some stick at the moment because obviously we're not getting the wins that we feel we should deserve, and he seems to be getting a reasonably large slice of the blame for that. But I think the main takeaway from the whole sort of shenanigans is that Potter just exercised some discipline and control over the squad, and he just basically told the squad, like, you know, don't step out of line, you will be left out. So whatever the reasons, we don't know what the reasons are, but clearly Potter felt that he had to make some sort of a statement, and it's quite reassuring to us as fans that he is prepared to do that.
Yeah. The interesting thing with this whole thing, Andy, and it was a very good point that you made there, is that there was a tweet from Dean Cox, actually, and he was saying that this sort of thing happens all the time, and very, very rarely does this sort of thing come out of the club. So it's interesting that there's been some sort of leak where this information has come out.
I just think there's a lot of frustration around the club at the moment, and maybe some voices have been slightly elevated, but because it is a frustrating time. I don't think there are many very happy people at the Albion at the moment because they're just too busy face palming themselves with the fact that we don't have more points.
I mean, it's interesting you're picking up on what Dean Cox has said there. And of all people who's actually known for shooting his mouth off, it was Dean Cox. But also, we've got the addition of the fact of, can we actually look at the same conditions as to dropping Matty Ryan as well, Marcus? I mean, Ryan that Morpay rounded on, or was there just a genuine rest? Because dropping a goalkeeper is a very unusual situation, isn't it?
Yes, it is. I'm not sure why he would have been dropped. I mean, there was a thing that did the rounds on one of the WhatsApp groups that sort of almost like every shot that Matty Ryan was facing, he was letting in, kind of. But that's not the that full story sense. Because he has made plenty of saves. So, maybe he was part of the altercation. I don't know. Maybe it was because he has maybe dipped in form, but Matty Ryan is not someone who I'd say is someone who needed a rest or a replacement. I mean, people like Mopay, you know, he's fluffed his lines a few times. I know he's scored a few goals as well. But it was a strange one. It was a strange one for me. And then bringing Sanchez in and not Steele, I think, who's the number two.
Well, that's exactly the point I was going to make, Marcus. I mean, that's a kick in the teeth for Jason Steele, really, isn't it, Andy?
It's certainly a surprise to everyone, but, you know, the manager sees what the manager sees, and I think maybe, you know, I mean, Sanchez looked perfectly good.
We
didn't put the foot wrong, in fairness.
But, I mean, Sanchez is obviously now the heir apparent to the number two slot, but we've also got Christian Walton to come back.
Is Sanchez Worthing?
No. No.
Who's the keeper?
Sanchez was at Rochdale last season.
Who was the Albion keeper that was on loan at Worthing about 2 or 3 years ago?
Well, there's Rocco Reese is there now. And there's the other fellow who I can't remember who's back with the Albion at the moment.
Okay.
But yeah, the guy that was linked with Barcelona. But the point I was going to make there was, obviously, this also sends out a message to Christian Walton, who... when he is fit again, will probably come in to be number two and challenging for that jersey. And he says, well, actually, Ryan isn't an immovable object. There is an opportunity for me to get in here.
Well, the interesting point is that Christian Walton played for the under-23s yesterday at Lancing. And the most positive thing I could say about that was I was watching the first half live on the club stream. And I'd say the most positive thing was the actual backdrop. Who knew that Lancing, the back of Lancing, could look so lovely? Because what was happening on the pitch was a nightmare. I left it on about 44 minutes and it was 3-0 to Man United. I'm not sure how it finished. But no, certainly. So Walton's certainly back playing again. And like I say, it was with the under-23s last night.
Okay. Well, let's get down to the nuts and bolts of this one. And it's going to be a VAR rant, I think, from our esteemed colleague, Mr. Bass here. But let's start with that Spurs penalty, Andy.
Well, here we go. it wasn't a foul. It was a foul by Harry Kane. It wasn't in the box. I can understand the referee making an error in real time. But once they've had the chance to review the video evidence and see how ridiculous the decision was for them to give a penalty when the original decision was a free kick, it's just simply astonishing. I mean, what is the point of VAR? I mean, you can see that as Lallana is jumping up for the ball, Harry Kane looks to see where Lallana is and he just simply backs into him. It's not clever play. It's actually dangerous play and it's foul play. And it's been rewarded with a totally undeserved penalty. And that's it for me, for VAR. Forget it.
Oh, come on, keep going.
It is just astonishing that they are allowed. This season has just been a litany of, you know, bad decisions after bad decisions. Harry Maguire one for Man United against Chelsea. It's just literally wrestling a player to the ground. How is that not a foul? I mean, what is a foul? Who knows? Batshuayi falling over, tripping over his laces and knocking Lamptey over is apparently a penalty too. Then, I mean, what is a foul? What isn't a foul? Last season, we didn't know what handball was. Now we've got no idea what is a, you know, what is a foul. Talk about initiating contact, Mr. Kane. You literally, I mean, he had to stretch to reach Lallana. I mean, fair play. He had to work hard to foul Lallana for that, but it's just ridiculous.
Marcus, in other sports, this is seen as Kane's play would be seen as a red card.
Not in offense. Cricket.
Well, not in cricket. I'd like to see him try it in cricket, actually. That would be, so, as the boulder steams in,
the umpire just back goes and flattens him.
But it's for rugby, for instance, it's seen like a spear tackle. It's dangerous play, and Lallana could have seriously been injured in that.
Yeah, I mean, there is some footage during the rounds of Harry Kane, and I think he did it against, it might have been West Ham.
West Ham, yeah.
It's the sort of thing, he's actually looking at the player, he's not watching the ball at all, whereas the player's sort of watching the ball, and then Harry Kane deliberately backs into him and sort of go, you know, sort of, well, A over T. So, it is dangerous. I mean, in real time, I genuinely thought the referee got it right, and he did, because Harry Kane was backing in. But I've seen Glenn do a more refined version of that, and Harry Kane was happy with the free kick. Spurs were happy with the free kick. The referee gave a free kick. Okay, maybe he shouldn't have done, but it's not a penalty. He didn't give it. And then, as Andy said, VAR got involved, and it was absolutely... And then it just became complete and utter farce. But... going back to it, Harry Kane, that's dangerous, and the referees really need to start looking out for that. I hope that's the last time Harry Kane will do it, but I'm guessing it's England captain syndrome, and therefore it's kind of because he's doing it, they'll turn a blind eye to it. The minute another player does it, like you say, red, yellow, dangerous play, etc. So,
the thing is, when VAR was originally touted and the four main areas that it was going to be looked at, is we're all against it. We thought, oh, you know, let's keep the game human. Let's keep it, you know, as uncontroversial as possible. And then we kind of saw it in the World Cup, and then we sort of brought it in and think, okay, well, we're not happy with it. It needs a few tweaks. But as Andy said just now, I think it's regressed. It's actually gone into Joseph Fritzl's basement at the moment. It's that bad. And I actually blaming the English version, the English referees, who seem to have their own take on what the laws of the game will be. Now, let's take this one for instance, is that one of the things that VAR can't do is adjudicate on a free kick. So when it comes to VAR having a look at this particular incident, what it can do is to see whether it is a free kick or a penalty. Now, when the referee sends it upstairs or the VAR says, hang on, let me have a look, what they're not adjudicating on is whether it's a foul. Whereas if it was in the area, they can adjudicate if it was a foul. Because it was originally outside the area, they can only adjudicate as to whether it was actually not outside the area, but inside, making it a penalty. So one wonders, and it's probably not going to be the case on account of the fact that the VAR referee clearly had a brain fart and said that actually, right, 3 yards outside the penalty area is a penalty, that he wouldn't have overturned a decision against Lallana. The other thing I was going to say, and this is away from VAR, that the Marcus raises about what Glenn used to do. And what Glenn never used to do, and I was thinking about this after I saw the Harry Kane on Aaron Creswell footage, was that Glenn would stand his ground, he would bow his body a little bit in order to make it look like he's being nudged. Yeah, what exactly. Harry Kane is doing is bending his body almost at 90 degrees before contact is initiated. And that's what makes it so dangerous. Lallana could have landed on his neck. Creswell could have landed on his neck. And yet, no one has actually called this for what it is. And that is seriously dangerous play.
You're right. Just quickly. I mean, as you know, sometimes I do, well, not at the moment because we're in lockdown, but I do sort of a form of jiu-jitsu. And actually, the sort of body shape that Harry Kane makes is what you make in jiu-jitsu if you want to throw somebody over your shoulder. Oh, quite right. Literally, you have to bend your body at that sort of 90 degrees to sort of get them, to get them over. And it's you know, and if you're not expecting it, which you are when you're in a training environment, you're right, I'm going to break full properly. But, you know, if you're not expecting that, the idea of these throws is to break somebody's neck, basically, because they're not supposed to expect it. And down they go and land on their, you know, land on the back of their neck. It's horrific.
Okay, and Andy.
And here's the other thing. Here's the other thing about that challenge. At no point during that phase of play did Harry Kane have any interest in getting to the ball.
No.
He was not trying to get the ball. He was not playing the ball. He was playing the man. How can someone who is not even attempting to play the ball, the victim of foul play from someone who is genuinely trying to get to the ball? Lallana was trying to jump up and head the ball. And Harry Kane was not like, on what planet is that? It's just, the referee has to answer for it.
And the other thing is that actually later in the game, and I think it was kind of the camera wasn't necessarily zoomed in on it, Kane did it again, but more on the halfway line, not as dramatically. And the referee called him for it. And you think, so, I mean, it's one thing when you've got inconsistency of referees because, and I do go back to this all the time, in the opinion of the referee. And if one referee says that, in my opinion, is a foul, and the next one says in the next game it isn't, that's one thing. It's when in the same game they say that's a foul and exactly the same thing on the halfway line isn't. So we've got this ridiculous set of notions where, yeah, the referee can make arbitrary decisions, but they must be consistent to actually see it, to be fair refereeing.
Okay, so we all agreed it was the wrong decision, but the penalty was given. Kane stepped up and put it past Sanchez, who went the wrong way. Now, we did equalise in this game, and there was another bit of VAR controversy on this one, where there was a foul in the build-up to Lamptey's goal. Now, who wants to take this one?
I'll take it.
Go on, then.
I'll say it wasn't a foul.
Go on.
Solly got to the ball first. I mean, they were both challenging for the ball. Solly got there first, and because of the speed of the challenge, the guy goes flying over him. I mean, it's just as simple as that.
I'm gonna be contrary with you, Andy. I thought it was foul.
Yeah, but I mean, I've watched it, and actually, I mean, you can see it on the footage they showed during the coverage of the game. But at the end of the game, they had like a little montage of highlights, and there was another angle which showed it even more clearly that Soddy got there.
Well, that's fair enough, and that's interesting enough. But what you could see, and this is the interesting point for me, is that when the referee was reviewing it, there's a couple of things I think, I don't think that he'd necessarily got right about this. He was viewing it from two particular angles. One was kind of behind Solly, and one was ahead of him, you know, the camera angle. And they were almost at 180 degrees to each other. And neither were particularly conclusive. Now, obviously, what the referee's got to go with is his original decision, and did I make a clear and obvious error? Now, what gets me about this is that he reviewed it by looking at two stills. In other words, he stopped the play, and yeah, a still can never tell the answer of what happened. It can for an offside because it's a moment in play. But when you've got a challenge that goes in, the only thing he's probably looking at is, was there the merest contact with the ball? What he's got to look at is, did I make a clear and obvious error? I'd still say he did, because I can't see any way. If you've seen another angle where it looks like Solly did get the ball, then fine, I haven't seen
it. You could see it on that angle.
Sorry?
I mean, you could see him get the ball. It was the merest touch, but he did get there first. They were both going for it, and he got there first. If, I have to say, in real time, it looked like a foul, and if he had blown up for a foul in real time, I don't think anyone would have complained, even myself. But
you know, the referee was there. He was 5 yards away, looking right at
him. He was actually in a good position. He did see it.
I'll take your word for it. But from what we saw, I'd have actually called it. And as a Spurs fan, and don't get me wrong, Spurs fans drive me up the wall. As a Spurs fan, I think I'd have probably had a legitimate gripe about that one.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it was a free. I think it was a foul. But I mean, the interesting thing here is that the ref went over to look at the screen. Apparently, this is the first time that the ref's been to look at the screen, and he hasn't overturned the decision. So, Only,
yeah, that's good, because Connolly was definitely a penalty when that got overturned. But the thing is with that was, again, the referee got it right. He awarded a goal, and I think it was VAR. They went, oh, you're going to have another look at that. And it's like, well, you know, if anything, it brought parity because of Spurs' outrageous penalty decisions. So it's kind of,
yeah.
You know.
Well, do you think he was trying to even it up then?
Go on, Mark. You say that because prior to that, obviously, it had not been evened up because we were denied a penalty when Trossard was fouled in the Tottenham box.
And that was a penalty.
That was a clear penalty. He's charging in on the ball in the centre of the penalty box. The defender's got his arm on him, impedes his progress. That is a foul. Trossard trying to play the ball, prevented from doing so by another player with the use of his arms. That's a foul. I mean, what is a foul now and what isn't a foul? I mean, I just...
No one knows.
We've given up all hope of understanding it.
Well, so, we'll come back to this as well, because there was another incident in the game last night where we'll talk about that shortly. Spurs did get a winner on this one. And it was Gareth Bale who got his first Spurs goal since his return. And where was the marking, frankly?
Where were the
part of the Red Sea, mate? Moses was in front of the Veltman and Webster, and waved his hand, and they both just
therein lies the point is that how much have we missed Lewis Dunk's rash challenge on the back of Lewis Dunk's rash challenge. You know, that's not to say that he'd have necessarily had Bale in his pocket, but he'd have actually been able to organise, I think, the defence a little bit better.
Yeah.
We definitely missed him.
I want to talk about him as a result of the Burnley game as well, so we'll come back to
that. Okay. Well, I mean, we did have lion's share of the possession, as I said at the top of the show, 57% of it, in fact, which is big numbers away at Spurs. Six shots, only two of them on target. And the other takeaway from this game is that the ref, Graham Scott, has been removed from duty this weekend as a result of his performance at the top of the
Cotswolds. Well, hang on, is it as a result of it? Do you know this? Or was he just not due to have a game anyway?
No, he's been removed from the list.
Really? Yeah, but it was VAR making the decisions, not, well, anyway.
Yeah, I mean, no, the referee makes the final decision. And let's face it, he gave a goal against the top six side. That can't happen.
Well, that's probably why he's not allowed to referee this week. Yeah.
Well,
hang on a minute.
Okay, you are listening to the Albion Raw here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. The show, as ever, is brought to you in association with the fabulous oldfootballshirts.com. And as usual, we have a shirt of the week for you, which I've sent over to the chaps here. So, Andy, can you just describe this particular chemise for me?
Well, this is a dandy, this one. It's very easy to describe as well. Basically, it is a yellow shirt, two yellow bands down the side, with a large white central section. It kind of looks, the sleeves look like jackets, looks like a yellow.
They are really huge. They're like wings
over a white shirt with a rather fetching black and yellow collar. And the sponsor is March Pole, manufactured by Olympic Sportswear. And the badge, I know Phil's tried to disguise it, but it's clearly Leighton Orient. And I have to say, I really like this shirt. It's very unusual. It's very unusual.
The only thing missing from it is a bow tie.
Yes, yeah. A bow tie would suit this. But yeah, it basically looks like a yellow suit with a white shirt. Yeah.
Those sleeves, though, it reminds me... The old Brighton Sports Express shirt which had really massive sleeves on it as well, which could come down to your elbows.
Which made me think, therefore, that this is from the early 90s.
It is not, actually, and this is what Phil from oldfootballshirts.com has to say about this particular jersey. He says, this is the 97 to 98 away shirt of Leighton Orient, as correctly guessed by Andy there. Nicknamed imaginatively the O's, they play at the 9,271 capacity Brea Group Stadium, more commonly known as Brisbane Road, and formerly known as Osborne Road. Currently, they play in EFL League 2, and over the years, they've yo-yoed through the leagues, including a memorable season in Division 1 in 1961-62, and less impressively, a spell in the National League between 2017 and 2019. The club was formed in 1881 as Glynn Cricket Club, and they then took the name Orient in 1888, and then became Clapton Orient in 1898, and in 1946, they finally settled on Leighton Orient. In 1977, they made it to the Anglo-Scottish Cup final, which they lost 5-1 on aggregate to Nottingham Forest. The following year, they made it to the FA Cup semi-final, losing 3-0 to Arsenal. Current links to the album include Martin Ling, who is the current director of football, and he joined us for 8 games in 2000. Winger Jordan Luke Maguire drew in as was with the AM for 3 years. Actually, he was very highly rated at the time, actually, wasn't he? Between 2016 to 2019. And of course, Colombian midfielder Stephen Alzate began his career at Brisbane Road before his move to Brighton in 2017. And there's a few more historical links between us and Orient. In the 50s, there was Dave Sexton. In the 70s, there was Tony Grealish. In the 80s, Dean Wilkins and Peter Taylor. In the 90s, Robbie Ryanout, Junior McDougall, Craig Maskell, Darren Curry, Paul Clark and Andy Anser. 2000, Lee Steele and Dean Cox. And in the 2010s, thanks, Phil. Andy Wing, Adam Chickson, David Button. Thank you very much for that, Phil.
More importantly than that, we've had some great days out at Leighton Orient. It's actually one of my favourite ones. Marcus, any that stand out? Andy, any that stand out?
The 4-1, I think it was, on a Tuesday night. We just lost to Brentford 1-0 on the Saturday, and we went up there on the Tuesday night, and you can see into the flats and people...
I know where this is going.
There was a friend of the show, Vicky, and it was sort of in between the goals. It was good to sort of see... the view was particularly nice, let's put it that way.
Oh, we're talking about the lady doing the ironing, aren't we?
Yeah. Well, I think she's making breakfast or dinner rather at that point.
That was very. Yeah,
can you describe her shirt of the week, Marcus? I think she wasn't wearing one.
I think she had a smashing blouse.
Andy, any good days out at Orient?
Well, that was a particularly good one because wasn't that Baz Savage?
Yes.
I think it was.
We were really in the deep doo-doo at that point and we needed a result.
Gatting scored as well, that one. There we go.
And Dean Hammond as well, that game.
We are talking about 11, 12 years ago.
One of the last games we had there when you could stand behind the goal. I think we won 2-0. Zamora scored.
Zamora and Brooker.
It was just millions of Albion there. It was just great. I mean, we had a good old rivalry with Orient, obviously fired up from the game at the Goldstone and Mr. McLeish. But we maintained a healthy, niggly rivalry. I don't really have many problems with Orient, but I quite enjoyed that rivalry and. We did have some good games up there. We also had some pretty dire ones. I remember the lone game which we lost, where we didn't know who any of our players were. Russell Slade's first game. Who the hell are they? Who the hell are you?
But even down here, do you remember the New Year's Day game when 5-0?
Oh, yeah. Leighton Orient were quite clearly hungover that day.
They were clearly hungover.
They weren't going to do anything that year in a division, so they just thought,
I remember speaking to a Leighton Orient fan, and he was at that game with Dean. And, it was a cold day. It was a grey day. It was one of those grey, cold days that go straight through to your bones. Not just a chilly day, but one of those where you cannot warm up. And we won 5-0. It was great stuff. But him at the far end, at the Worthing end, he said, look, just every time we got the ball, we were expecting Brighton to score. He said, 5-0, we were lucky to get away with five. It was so horrifying. But I mean, I think just going up to Brisbane Road as well, it was just included going to Borough Market and to, you know, to the Market Porter and just meeting up with everyone there. It's I hope that, you know, one day, even if it's in the FA Cup, once we're back in the grounds, that we can actually play Orient away, because there is a side of me that misses that small part of, you know, those smaller grounds. Don't get me wrong,
a lot of grounds like that
in the Premier League, but I do, you know, I do enjoy a day out somewhere like Orient. Yeah. I'm also, if we go to London, let's mention this. If we've got two new grounds to go to in London when we go back, and however it is we're going to play them, we've got Brentford. And congratulations to AFC Wimbledon, who finally moved back to Powell Lane. They got a new ground that's where the old Speedway track was, but they finally moved home, and well done to them. Ironically,
it looks great as well, doesn't it?
They played their first game at Plough Lane against Doncaster, who themselves scored in the 93rd minute. Now, you know, there's some interesting sort of like tie-ins there, but anyway, you know, congratulations to AFC Wimbledon finally going home after all those years.
Yeah, there's a lot to be said for those smaller grounds though, which you know, there's not so many of them around these days. Obviously, a lot of clubs moving into new ones, but you know, it's great going to places like Carlisle and Rochdale, and you know, places that you wouldn't ordinarily go to. And I do miss those places.
Anyone listening to the show would think we're actually not wanting to be in the Premier League at the moment, and we're actually
going. Well, no, we're just trying to avoid talking about Burnley.
Oh, well, there is that. Yeah, we've only got 29 minutes of the show to go, mate. So good luck.
Okay, well let's get down to last night then, and the news was that Neil Morpay was back from the naughty step, and he started alongside Danny Welbeck, who made his first start for the Albion, and Matty Ryan was also back in. Solly March and Leandro Trossard were injured. So yeah, I mean it was. I mean, looking at the side, I was quite excited when I saw the team, Andy.
Yeah, it was good to see Welbeck up alongside Mopay, and see Danny get his first start. I just think that hopefully this will be the beginning of a beautiful partnership. I was a bit surprised to see. I actually thought Sanchez was going to play in this game.
Really?
And I was surprised that he didn't even make the bench. So I don't know what was going on with Potter there. Gross gets a second game, which I think is interesting, because I do think we're missing Alzati. But when we were talking about the performance, I thought Gross is all right, actually. But I just wonder whether he's really got the pace and vim that we need to...
It's interesting you should zero in on Gross that way, because I thought that, you know, for all the fluid and a lot of fluid football there was, I thought that Gross was playing at his usual second gear, whereas, you know, the rest of them were up a couple more gears. Don't get me wrong about, and we can rant all we want about the finishing. Let's be of no doubt here. It's another game we dominated. It's another game where the midfield was bossing. And I think probably with the exception of Manchester City and Liverpool, and I'm going to include the other big four here, there's no teams apart from those, you know, City and Liverpool, where we are not capable of bossing a game. And we've done it against Spurs, and we did it against, in Chelsea. With
Man United. Chelsea. And we did, but largely against Chelsea. I mean, the Chelsea game.
We can
boss. Again, it was missing chances. If Lewis Dunk had equalised, then
absolutely. So I have very few worries about playing any of the top six apart from City and Liverpool. And even then, when we played Liverpool at the end of last season, bossing the games. So I've got no worries about that. But Gross did seem to be a little bit off gear. It's not as though he gave the ball away. I thought he did keep things moving, but in a pace that was actually more susceptible for Houghton than it is for Potter.
Early bass.
Yeah, to be funny enough, Al, I was re-watching the highlights this morning, and I had exactly the same thought. And I was just thinking, okay, look, we're going
sorry,
to be
mate.
I'm going to be, disappointed that that obviously we didn't win the game. But I was thinking, I think I was watching it. I was thinking, it really doesn't matter who we're playing, because we've got a reasonable rhythm and pattern to the play now. The transition from 18-yard box to 18-yard box is very, very good. It's as good. It's as, to be honest, it's as good as as it's ever been in my tenure of watching the Albion in over the last 20 years. I just don't think I've seen a team of ours just move the ball so smoothly. So you're right. We do it against opponents of any level. So whether it would be Burnley at the bottom or, you know, Liverpool at the top, we're moving it in the same way against both sides. I did think it was again another microcosm of our season, because we did have the chances to win the game. I thought Burnley defended very well. They perfected the art of getting in the way, which is exactly what good defensive teams should do. Mm-hmm. But there are a couple of opportunities that we had where they didn't get in the way and we fluffed our lines.
There was a very, very, very early chance for Tarek Lamptey, where he was put through after a brilliant pullback from Welbeck, and he blazed it over. Nick Pope, he was probably Burnley's man of the match, because, he made some absolutely crucial saves in that game to keep parity. One of which was a chance where Danny Welbeck was actually put through and Pope was out to make the save. Was it a bad miss or a great save?
Both, I think. I think Welbeck will think he should have done better with it. He'll be frustrated by that. But the goalkeeper deserves a lot of credit.
Exactly. Yeah.
I thought with the there was a second chance that Welbeck had where he, just a slight bit of miscontrol meant that Pope had enough time to run out and meet him.
I think Welbeck's probably a little bit short of match sharpness, or that's the pros would say. You know, he probably needs two or three more games under his belt. It was a good start, an encouraging start though, to be fair. We just want to see more of it. His movement was excellent. Seemed to link up well with Mope, so it's promising. Just needs to get more minutes under his belt, I think, and then possibly three or four games down the line, the chances that he had in a Burnley game, hopefully, will end up in the back of the net, because his England record is second to none. But I believe at Man United and Arsenal, he was kind of playing more on the right. But when he played for England, he played through the centre, which is why his goal-scoring record for England is pretty bloody good.
Yeah.
You just answered a question I was about to ask, because, how do you think Welbeck played? He is historically a sick note, historically, at club level. And I think that, when someone plays out wide, that their goal scoring figures aren't as good as they could or should be. I mean, I just felt that actually he looked, for someone who is, I say, historically a sick note, not played a huge amount, and for all his ring rustiness, I thought he was actually pretty fluid, pretty good on the ball.
Yeah.
He controlled it well. He showed Morpé what he should be doing. Hopefully Morpé can pick up from that. I thought that, and what's more, he had, 85 minutes? Didn't seem to be blowing after that. He seems okay. And like you say, hopefully he can only get better with that level of sharpness. Yeah, maybe three or four games into it, he'd have tucked them away and he might have had, two or three goals.
One key thing I was going to notice, pick up from there as well, was actually it was that chance that you were talking about there, Andy, where Pope came out to gather the shot. But the run from Welbeck, where he actually bent it and managed to stay onside, was absolutely brilliant. And that is something that our other strikers do need to learn.
Yeah.
I mean, there was a lot of positive things to take out of this game. And the Spurs game, we didn't really have a chance to talk about the good things. There's so many annoying things in that game. but the football we're playing is really good to watch. I've kind of actually sort of got over the fact that we never flipping score or convert these chances. But I'm just trying to take my enjoyment out of the football being good to watch, just the movement. I know Potter's getting some criticism, and I think some of it is warranted, but really look at how we've been transformed under this man. I just think we have to we're just going to have to put up with it until the players just start putting
doing
these chances.
The thing they're supposed to be doing.
We kind of glossed over the Tarek Lamptey miss, and as brilliant as he's been this season, and again he had another great game last night. marauding forward. I thought he looked very, very good. But that's a sitter. That is an absolute... Yeah, that's an absolute...
We're talking about the one in the first 40 seconds.
Yeah, should have scored. To balloon it over like that, you know, we can't afford to miss those chances. And
yeah, that's a fair
point. We're missing them. Our opponents are scoring them.
Scoring them, yeah.
There is one other aspect of the game I do want to talk about. And is that one, certainly when you know that, I won't say Burnley are a big crash-bang wallop side, but I've got to say they don't look great. But they are a threat from set pieces. And the set pieces they had last night, the corners, I thought we dealt with them very, very well.
Yeah.
They did
appear to target Matty Ryan on these.
Well, yeah, and we protected him. And so in that sense, the defence held solidly, especially given our record of how we've been with set pieces this season. I think that there is a clear improvement. Yeah. I think the one chance they did have where the bloke was clear, I noticed he was offside anyway from a free kick. That said, one thing I would say about the defence, and if I can keep you from hitting the afterburners, Marcus, and going into orbit, was that the times when the defence, and I'm going to say all three of the main, all of the defenders, I'm going to say it for Byrne, I'm going to say it for Webster, I'm going to say it for Velt, I'm going to say it for White, all of them were sloppy in their passing at times from defence to midfield in a way that, and this is where I'm so glad he's back next time, in a way that Lewis Dunk isn't. Yeah. So
apparently Webster gave the ball away 23 times last night.
Who did?
A stat for you. Yeah.
Who did?
So much for the ball playing centre back. Adam Webster, my friend.
Yeah. Can I just point out to our listener that Marcus sounds quite echoey. He's actually recording this because we're all doing this on Zoom. He's actually doing it in what is basically an empty house. And the way he said that about my friend Webster, he's got his back against the wall as if he was, well, frankly, lining up, you know, taking Webster's place in a firing squad.
Yeah.
That look of guilty resignation on his face.
I thought I thought he was looking like he's just rolling up the plastic sheeting, actually. But
there is that. But having said that, I still maintain that Webster has vastly improved since lockdown. The number of errors that there was the Adam Elab factor, the number of errors that he used to put into each game, which may or may not have cost us, depending on who we were playing, have largely gone. But in Lewis Dunk's absence, and don't get me wrong, I think he was a perfectly good standing captain, but in Lewis Dunk's absence, I thought his game got a little bit sloppy, and I'm glad when Lewis Dunk will be back.
Absolutely.
Another thing I wanted to bring up here, I mean, there's two things, I'll come to the second one in a minute, but I mean, I've got written down here the honest Tarik Lamptey, because there was a chance that he had when he surged into the box like he does, and there was a clear tug on him, and if he'd have gone down, that should have been a penalty, because it was a foul on him in the box, but he stayed on his feet. Now, obviously, I mean, we see it all time and time again with Aaron Connolly going over too early, too easily. I mean, where do we stand with this? I mean, do we want off?
Him not going over doesn't mean say it's not a foul.
No, it doesn't.
I mean, this is where VAR should be picking up on it. If they see a shirt tug, whether he goes down or not,
he should be
calling it. You know,
Right.
Someone flying over doesn't actually, you know, and it's actually interesting you mention Aaron Connolly. You know, in the last few minutes of the match, Burnley player makes a slip. And I'm thinking, you're through. Go on, son. No, he decides to hurdle him and flatten him, and he gets nothing for it. This is what's driving me up the wall about Aaron Connolly, is his first port of thought almost is to win a free kick, not score a goal. And I'm thinking that aspect of him has got to be kicked out of his game immediately.
See, I thought that, I know it was the Burnley fella slipped, but I actually thought that was a foul.
No, I mean, I think Connolly went to hurdle him rather than actually go round him, because the bloke had slipped over and he had an opportunity to go past him. It probably should have been given as a foul in as much as he impeded his way. But I think that Connolly went looking for it. That's what it looked like in real time. I haven't seen it since, but in real time, in my mind's eye, that's what it looked like at the time.
I think...
Go on, Andy.
I was just going to say, I think it's an interesting point that you're making, saying, like, you know, just because he didn't go down doesn't mean it wasn't a foul. And like you say, just because there may have been some contact and the player does go down doesn't mean that's a foul either.
Yeah.
And I think what Lamptey showed in that in that. So it's quite often those levels of contact are not sufficient to fell a player. But they just choose to dive. They just choose to fall. I mean, that's the other thing we didn't talk about in the Spurs game. Like the two outrageous dives from Kane and Son within seconds of one another. I mean, it's flipping cheats. You know,
but that's the Mourinho side. That's how they set themselves up.
So. Just God, blimey! I'm just bringing it all back now. But
can I remind? I know that we're on the radio, but can I admire your restraint for actually how you really describe them? So,
but I don't know. I mean, again, I just wanted to sort of talk about a little bit about Lallana as well from last night.
Go for it.
And one of the best signings we've made in years, I think. I mean, what he's really looking the part now. He is running the middle of the park.
He's the man, isn't he?
Yeah. He just knows where to be. He's threading passes through. He's now getting up to speed. The passes are coming with greater regularity and more incisiveness. He's linking up with, you know, linking up with Welbeck and Morpay and Lamptey, just building great relationships with players all over the pitch. He looks every bit the leader. And I think again he's playing himself back into fitness. Yeah. But this
was the second game in succession that he's lasted the whole 90 minutes as well.
But he's going to get a 2-week break.
Hasn't he played more minutes for us than he did for Liverpool in the whole of last season?
I don't know. It's
or something like that. I'm reading.
That might actually well be true.
I think it is true.
let me look at it this way. Those that were at Lewis Football Ground, bear with me here, Lewis Football Club, about 8 years ago when Bruno made his debut in a pre-season friendly, those that were there could see there was something special. It was a pre-season friendly. Yes, he was playing against Lewis. And people said, yeah, well, he looks good because he's only playing against Lewis. And you think, no, he looks good because he looks a cut above every single Albion player. And you could see that, and he went on to be the hero he was. Now, let's fast forward to now, and you've got Lallana. I saw something about it when it was the Chelsea friendly, the one that we all turned up to, and we saw him playing then. And yes, he looked a little bit off pace, certainly compared to where he is now. But you could also tell there was something about him, the way that he could actually get the ball and create his little 3 yards of space and move the ball about and see the pass. And now he's more integrated with the side. Like you say, you're quite right, Andy. I it didn't occur to me really he's improved. I just thought he was a great player in the first place. But what his role is doing in actually bringing everyone else in is actually improving. And there's one player specifically I think that he is improving, is the work that Yves Bissouma does. Because Lallana will do the job that Bissouma's doing 15, 20 yards behind him, you know, in as much as trying to keep the ball moving. And if Lallana wasn't playing, I think Bissouma's job would be a lot harder. And so Yves Bissouma is being made to look good, I think, on the back of Lallana's hard work as well.
Okay, one player that wasn't involved last night, and that's one that was actually on the bench because he's now back to full fitness, is David Prepper. I mean, is he going to get back into the side at any point? Because it's going. I mean, I think we needed a little bit of his guile last night.
I don't think so. I think he's down the list. I think.
Yeah, I do.
I mean, for some reason, Elzati's, you know, lost out of favour at the moment. But I would say Bissouma and Lallana, and then you've got Gross, who's now back in favour. You've got McAllister. You've got Ali Reza, you've got Trossard. I mean, that whole, you've got millions of people that could play in that area. I think he's a bench option, maybe for like substitutions. Mm. But I don't see him, I don't think he's going to start too many games. So, Davey, get warmed up for the next one, mate.
Yeah, exactly.
It'll
be first pick.
I think Andy's analysis there is spot on. It is a case of Trossard is the first choice for that particular other midfield / forward berth. Then clearly it's Gross is ahead of Prepper. So if Gross was going to come off, I know he was replaced. the thing is, when Potter does this, it's not as though he'll make a substitution that's like for like, because you know he left them late, quite late last night because we were so on top still. But yeah, I think that probably the role that Purple would have had would have been more Gross's role, and if Gross had come off earlier in the game, say through an injury, then Purple might have gone on. But obviously, he changed it around in the last few minutes just to see if he can get something out of it.
Okay. Well, this was the first game this season where we have failed to find the net, we had so many chances. I mean, it's the one we obviously we talked about the Welbeck chance early on, but there was a couple that fell to Neil Maupay where it was put through, and again, you expect him to at least hit the target on these, and it's just his decision making in that final third is just too slow.
A couple of them were blocked.
Yeah, I'm going to say Burnley defended very well. I mean, we came up against a stacked box each time, and there really wasn't a lot of, you know, there really wasn't a lot more they could do. I thought, you know, Tarkowski and me were just, and Taylor were just getting in the way. I mean, credit to Burnley, they defended in a similar way to the way that we used to, you know, in the Duncan Duffy days, where we were just block shots.
Good old fashioned defending. Yeah, that's
what it was. Yeah. Absolutely. No, there's one aspect of the game that actually really didn't, you know, obviously you come away from the game. I was privileged, and I do use the word privileged when we're in the press box. I was privileged to be there, you know, knowing full well that so many weren't. And it's seriously cold up there. I mean, it's quite chilly even during a hot day, but it's seriously cold up there. But what really didn't help my mood as we were coming away from that, as we're getting the lift back down to the ground floor, I don't know who he was. I got the feeling it was a Brighton fan. And if I could have actually found out, I'd have called him on it, because what he said afterwards really was the baddest timing he could have said. One, he said Brighton are definitely going down because, and I kid you not, one, Leeds United are better. Two.
Who let a horse in?
Sorry.
Yeah, kettle's ready. two, they are one of the worst. Brighton is one of the worst teams he's ever seen. And three, there aren't three worst teams in this division. Four, well, this is our fourth season, so it's going like last time. We will go down. And I said, is that the answer to your entire thing? You said that we are definitely going. Hang on. Oh, and the other thing is when I responded to him, I said, listen, no one gets relegated in November, and certainly not after, was it 10 games, 11 games? You know,
particularly when this season started in September.
Well, quite. No one gets relegated in November. Ah, but Fulham are picking up points. And I'm just thinking, you really have a death wish, mate. I mean, you know, all right, I feel sort of sad for him now. But at the time, it was along the lines of mental. So
on BBC SCR, they said at this point of the stage last season on games played, I think we're 2 points ahead of where we were.
Right.
On even games played. Saying we're 2 points ahead of where, you know, so, yeah.
You know, so, but no, we're going down because Leeds are better.
Yeah. And we've got to be positive on this. Obviously, the football is great. We've just got that composure at the end, and it's just if the finishing is just that is the concern at the moment. We've got to turn our dominance into wins. Now, obviously, a 0-0 draw with Burnley is very, very predictable. But there's no proof that it actually happened because it was on pay per view. Some of the figures have come out for this week, and they've been very, very bad as predicted. But it looks like it's going to be scrapped now.
Yes. Well, I think when I say scrapped, I've got a feeling that when they originally brought it in, it was only with a view to see how it goes up until the international break. And so when they said they voted for it to be scrapped, I think what they did was they've kind of perversely not voted to continue it. So, you know, I know it sounds a bit of a bizarre thing, as in it was only ever going to be a trial run. this was clear from briefings we were getting from the Premier League that it was only ever going to be a trial run. It's clearly, I think possibly, and we've discussed it before on here, it was the price level that actually put so many people off, especially now we've all gone into to lockdown again, but it's the price level. If it was a tenner, if it was a fiver, people might have sort of viewed it differently. And then we had the ridiculous finger pointing between the Premier League and the broadcasters and Uncle Tom Cobley and all. And it was very unclear, very unsavoury. But what we don't know what's going to happen next is what does happen next. You know, what's for all the games that aren't selected. And we're back to the argument of, if you want to see an English Premier League team, there are three countries in the world where you can't see them. North Korea, Saudi Arabia, and England, you know, apart from on Sky. So if you're in any other country, you can watch an English Premier League game, except in England.
Yeah, well, that was the whole thing about the pricing point, wasn't it? Because their argument was, yeah, well, we've got to put extra cameras in there. We've got to get extra commentators.
No, they don't.
No, you don't.
Yeah, Kieran shot that one down.
It's just absolute farce. But, I mean, it's... You know, and it has a lot of people have gone down the route of piracy, which is not.
How was your piracy viewing?
I was on a ship somewhere.
Okay. Playing on Radio Caroline.
Yeah. Yeah. By Radio Luxembourg. Yeah. It's.
I reacquainted myself with the joys of Johnny Cantor and Warren Aspinall last night.
Oh right. Yeah.
Listen to it on the radio, which was nice to hear those.
So how is that for you? Because I mean, you know, when you're listening to the radio, and we're back to Nick Hornby on Fever Pitch here, that if they can't paint a picture of absolutely everyone being there, you're in terror that the back four isn't lined up properly. So how is it for you listening to them?
I found it far less frustrating than actually watching the game because I couldn't see the chart.
I listened to it on the radio as well. So, yeah.
And so I was actually a lot more relaxed. I never felt anxious at all.
Even with Warren Aspinall's happy.
Well here's the thing. I mean, we were talking about our many sojourns around the country earlier on. Our trips to the likes of the far-flung places of the north, like Bury and Hartlepool and Rochdale and Carlisle. I mean, back in those days, you know, if we didn't go to the game, the only way we would be able to get coverage of it is to listen to the radio. And a lot of people have gone back to that. And we were talking to Johnny about that last week, and that was great. But I mean, it is, like you said last week, Al, it's very difficult for the commentators to get the atmosphere going when there's no atmosphere in the ground.
Well, they said they hated it, and it is quite tricky. I mean, the only you can hear. I mean, I'm in the top of the West Stand upper, and thankfully I'm not broadcasting. There was a time where the ball got landed in on the halfway line, and two Brighton players went for it, and a Burnley player went for it. There was hesitation with the Brighton players. The Burnley player won the ball, and when the ball went dead, you could hear Lallana, and I will not repeat what he said, but you could hear Lallana screaming his lungs out along the lines of, "There was two of you, please sort it out next time." Insert your own expletive, and you can hear that from the top of the West Stand. And it was a Preston Park moment, and of course that's almost certainly going to be picked up on Johnny's effects mic as well. I mean, it's kind of interesting, you know, watching Cantor and Aspinall at Sellers Park. Johnny had commentated on the whole game standing up. Don't know why. Maybe it was cold. I don't know what it was, but an Aspinall was sort of sat there, arms folded, grumping at the, you know, Albion's profligacy once again. The body language was hilarious.
Yeah, but I think Johnny probably just wanted to show off his new very fetching bubble hat, which he's wearing.
And it's a wonderful effort. You enjoyed it, Andy, did you?
I did. Yeah, it was good. It was good. I enjoyed the show last week as well. You had Johnny and Andy on. It was a good show.
That's all we've got time for this week. So thank you to Alan Wares, to Andy Bass, and to Marcus Hancock. We'll be back next week. And thanks for listening.
Now, just as a sign-off, we don't normally do shout-outs here, but there's just too many to avoid this week. So happy birthday, as we said on the show, to AD Packham. A happy birthday to our show sponsor, Phil Shelley of oldfootballshirts.com. And more personally for me, happy birthday to my better half, Susie, who hits something or other this week. Happy birthday to you all.
Tell our friends is when they say, ooh la la, wake up, pretty Susie. Wake up, pretty Susie. Well, I told you, mama, that you'd be in by 10. Well, Susie, baby, looks like we goofed again. Wake up, pretty Susie. Wake up, pretty Susie. We gotta go home. Wake up, little Susie, wake up. Well, the movie wasn't so hot, it didn't have much of a plot. We fell asleep, our gooses cooked, our reputation he shot. Wake up, little Susie, wake up, little Susie. Well, what are we gonna tell your mama? What are we gonna tell your papa?